The surveying job took a while. Jared knew his business, but he didn't rush. When Jared's job was finished and the new claim plainly marked on his map, Muley and I ground some of our scant supply of corn into meal as a gift to him. First thing we did after Jared left was to begin breaking ground on the big flat. It was hot, back-breaking work. Thomas and I took turns standing guard while the other one and Muley strained and sweated behind the heavy wooden plows. We couldn't trust Muley to stand guard. We had tried it only to see him forget his task and go chasing off with his dog after a rabbit or a deer or hunting a bee tree. With summer on the way, we had to get our seed planted and up to a good stand before the full heat came on. So we kept chopping trees, pulling stumps, breaking ground, and putting in seed. We didn't allow ourselves to let up from daylight until dark, except for what little time was necessary to hunt game and prepare meals. The day finally came when we had caught up, at least temporarily. The corn was rising, and enough rain had fallen so that it wouldn't parch. Now we could begin thinking about a cabin. We built corrals first for the livestock in a low-roofed shed open on the south. Then we began felling trees and squaring them up so they would stack and make a neat fit with a minimum of chinking. Because there had been no sign of intrusion, we loosened our reins on Muley, letting him go out after the game it took to keep us fed. It was Muley who saw the first Indians.
It's Indians, Josh! It's Indians!
I ran for my rifle. Thomas stood soberly scanning the scattered timber beyond the flat.
I don't see nothing chasing him, Josh. You gotta remember, Muley ain't bright.
I saw them! Josh!
I don't see anything, Muley. Maybe it was just a deer or some wild horses.
No, sir! They were there, whole bunch of them, on horseback.
Did they shoot at you, Muley?
No, Josh. They just sat there and looked at me. They didn't move. Didn't even say howdy. I didn't say howdy neither. I just lit out running.
It was likely just his imagination. Well, we better go see.
I slung powder horn and shot pouch over my shoulder and saddled my horse. Muley and Thomas did the same. We skirted the newly broken field and moved through scattered oak trees. We kept clear of underbrush where a red man might hide, though we scouted it for tracks.
They was there, Josh. They was as real as you and me and Hickory. He barked at them. He wouldn't bark if they wasn't real, would he?
No, Muley, he wouldn't. We scouted and circled and saw nothing. At length, Thomas reined up.
We're wasting our time, Josh.
I seen them! Really?
Sure, Muley. You saw them, but they've gone now. We started back. I kept my gaze on the ground looking for tracks. I didn't expect to see them, but suddenly, there they were.
Yonder's the place, Josh! Yonder's where I seen them at!
A chill ran down my back. My grip tightened on the rifle. I touched my heels to the horse's ribs and started ahead, nerves tightening.
That tree yonder, Josh, that's where they was!
Slowly, I rode to a huge old live oak. I found the sign there, plain and fresh. There had been horses here, two of them. They didn't shoot at Muley. Maybe they were friendly.
Well, there were friendly Indians in Tennessee, too, in Papa's time. But there was a heap of unfriendly ones. You couldn't hardly tell them apart till it was too late. The dead ones you could trust.
Thomas, you're always too hard on Muley. You'll have to admit, he was right about this.
You don't have to have any sense to see Indians.
Well, we oughtn't to be surprised none. Folks told us there would likely be Indians. We won't leave here just because they showed up.
Nah. Indians go with new land and western, just like a snake bite and a fever. We come to stay.
After that, we built the corral fence a little higher, and we rushed our construction work. Clear the view and help reduce the chance of surprise attack, we cut down most of the trees that stood near the rising cabin. When we weren't using the horses in the daytime, we staked them on fresh grass at the end of a long rope. At night, we never failed to bring them into the corral and tie the gates shut with rawhide. Several nights, Hickory's barking woke us up, afraid Indian horse thieves were trying to open the corral. It always turned out to be no more than a skunk or a coon, or at most, a grazing deer. One night, the dog didn't bark at all. Next morning, Thomas went out to milk the cows and found fresh moccasin tracks near the corral.
If they come stealing, the first thing they'll take will be the watchdog. That hound of yours is cowardly and no account.
He's a good dog. Sure enough, he is. You ain't fixing to do something to him, are you?
No, don't fret over that.
The time finally came when the cabin was up, the chimney finished, logs arrived for clapboard shingles, and the roof covered over so that it wouldn't leak badly in the rain. The field had been hoed and the garden work caught up with. The corn was coming along nicely.
Thomas, don't you think we ought to go now and get acquainted with the neighbors we haven't met yet? When the crops start ripening, we'll be busy again.
We've got along pretty good so far without worrying about neighbors.
But we might need them someday, and maybe they'll need us. We ought to get acquainted.
I'd as soon not have any truck with Mexicans. I don't see how any good could come of it.
They're there. I don't expect they'll move away just because we've come. And like Jared said, we'll need all the friends we can get.
Chances are we couldn't understand them no way. We'd have to make sign talk like a bunch of Indians.
Our rifles speak the same language. Mexicans or not, we'd want them with us if we ever have Indian trouble.
We'll go.
We took Muley along, afraid to leave him by himself. We found the country west of us to be much the same as our own. There were wild-natured cattle of every color in the rainbow, with long horns and long legs that carried them with almost the swiftness of deer.
Notice something about these cattle, Thomas? They, everyone, got a firebrand on their hip, and it's always the same brand. Sort of an H, done up stylish. H for Hernandez, I reckon.
This far out, what difference would it make who they belong to?
I bet they can drive these cattle down to the settlements and sell them for beef.
You may have an idea, Josh. I'd put up my horse against Muley's spotted dog. These are plain wild cattle that was running free. These Mexicans just gathered them and put their brand on them and made them theirs. We could do that, too.
Take them away from the Mexicans?
No, I don't mean that. But we could hunt down wild cattle and burn our brand on them and bring them down to our place. With our three cows and a bull, it's gonna take us a long time to get a herd together. This way, we could rush things right smart.
Maybe the Mexicans will teach us how they do it.
We can learn by ourselves.
Gradually, we dropped back somewhat behind Thomas. He rode up over a rise and pulled his horse to a sudden stop. He motioned excitedly for us to stay back. Slowly, carefully, Thomas slipped off of his horse. He motioned again for us to stay back, but I wouldn't have done it for a sack full of silver. I dismounted and moved up, leading my horse. Muley's eyes were wide with wonder as he came along behind me.
What is it, Thomas?
If Thomas could have found a quiet way to kill him, he might have done it then and there.
Why didn't you do what I told you?
Because I want to see.
He put his fingers to his lips. What I saw made the hair bristle around my collar. Down in a flat, two men rode along horseback, side by side, rifles in their hands, ready to fire in an instant. Flanking them rode six Indians, three on each side. Two of the Indians carried lances. One had a gun of some sort. The other three held bows with arrows strung and ready to loose. They moved in silent, patient menace.
Cat and mouse. They know they got those men in traps, and now they're playing it like a game.
Six against two. They could finish it in a second.
They're wondering a little, though. Those two fellas have each got one shot to fire. When they die, they'll likely take a couple of engines with them. That's what's holding the Redskins off.
Thomas, there's three of us. That would narrow the odds.
It would if those were white men, but they're just a couple of Mexicans.
That doesn't make any difference.
It does to me. When my time comes to die, I want it to be for something important. I say let the Mexicans take care of their own.
Then you just sit here.
You're not going down there. It's not our put-in.
Josh, don't you go and leave me.
You stay with Thomas.
I want to stay with you, Josh.
You're as simple-minded as Muley is. But if you're bound and determined, I won't let you go by yourself and get killed. Just remember, if these Mexicans slit our throats someday, this is your idea.
We put Muley in the middle, where he might be less of a hazard to himself and to us. Then, riding abreast, we walked our horses over the crest and started down the other side. One of the lance-carrying Indians spotted us before we got down to the flat.
Table.
The Indians halted. The two Mexicans immediately turned their horses so that the men were back-to-back, facing out and ready to fire instantly in any direction. An Indian loosed an arrow. It missed us by a long way. I held my breath as we kept riding, the rifles cradled in our arms. I could see Muley's face whitening.
Don't show them you're scared, Muley.
I am scared.
So am I, but we don't want them to know it.
I'll try to grin at them, Josh.
We better stop here.
We stopped. Our rifles pointed at the Indians 30 feet away. For a minute or two, it was a contest of wills. They tried to stare us down. We stared back. The six pulled their horses around and started away in a long trot. One of the Mexicans shouted something I couldn't understand. They quickly stepped down from their saddles. 50 yards away, the Indian suddenly stopped and whirled around. The one who had a gun fired it. The ball fell short. The others loosed their arrows. One of the Mexican horses fell, kicking and screaming. Again, the Indian's wheel had moved into a lope away from us. The horse threshed, an arrow in its flank. The Mexican waited until the horse laid its head upon the ground, then lowered his rifle and fired point blank. He turned gravely toward us and removed his big-brimmed hat.
Gracias, señores.
Mister, I don't know what you're saying, and I'm sorry about that.
The Mexican was in his early 20s, his face a light brown, his eyes black. The other was much younger, about 16.
Too much excitement. I forgot, you do not understand.
He speaks American!
I am called Ramon Hernandez. I speak a little only of the English.
I'm Josh Buckaloo, and I don't speak Mexican at all. That yonder is my brother Thomas. This other fella here is Muley Dodd.
And this is Felix. For Felix, this is the first time death has come so close. He can smell its breath.
You have much trouble with Indians?
Not many times. Most times, they just want to steal horses. Today, these young Indians, they find two Mexicanos and think, "Hi, why not get two scalps to take home, show women?" Very easy, he thinks. Comanche, he does not fight much when he is not sure he wins. You come, he goes.
They might come back.
Maybe not for months again. Where you come from?
We're neighbors. We got land yonder ways.
Good to have people here. When someday we have enough people, Indians come no more. Felix and me, we take you home with us. We want family to see you.
We'd be right tickled.
We would be friends. Maybe you teach me better English.
Ain't no doubt about that. Time I get through teaching you, there won't be no college professor that talks better. Now, which way's the house?
The Hernandez house blended into the land, and I didn't even see it at first. It was long and squat, almost flat-roofed, its walls of rock and its roof held up by timbers dragged from the banks of a creek nearby. Smaller houses and sheds clustered around the main house, all within easy running distance in case of attack. We rode in. Ramon pointed toward an opening in the heavy corral, which was built of live oak limbs stacked and wedged between pairs of stout posts.
Luchamos contra
a pair
los
of boys indios. Came running at Ramon's call. He spoke to them in fast, clipped Spanish that I could only marvel over. That language, I thought, was going to be a booger to learn. We followed Ramon's lead and unsaddled. As we started toward the house, Felix and Muley somehow seemed to fall in with each other. Thomas followed along behind, making it plain he was not keen on any part of this.
Mama, tenemos huéspedes.
An elderly woman appeared in the open door of the long rock house, her brown hand up over her eyes. She peered out beyond the broad brush arbor that served in lieu of a porch.
Ramon, Felix, ¿quién son esos hombres? ¿Amigos? Buenos días, amigos.
Ellos nos ayudaron a combatir los indios.
Indios!
She came first to me, then to Muley, and finally to the flustered Thomas, kissing each of us in turn.
Please, it is not much, but sit. Be to home. This house is your house. Mama will bring you to drink. I bring the family.
As the gray-haired mother bustled about excitedly, I took a long look at the room. The house was stoutly built, but spartanly furnished. Almost everything appeared hand-built, probably right there. The rock walls were mostly bare, except for a few clothes pegs and a crude carved crucifix prominently displayed. Heavy shutters were hung inside each windowsill with a bar which could be dropped to secure them. In each shutter was a small leather-hinged porthole, rifle size.
This is more than just a house, Thomas. This is a fort.
Don't look like much to me.
I want you to meet my brothers and sisters.
He lined them up by ages, ranging from a boy of 6 or 7 up to a pretty black-eyed girl, I guess to be 14, or maybe 15. She was still lank and a little awkward, but in a year or two, the woman would begin showing through. Then there would be visitors aplenty to the Hernandez door.
Here we have Enrique, Consuelo, José, Margarita, Alfredo, and Maria. Teresa! ¿Dónde estás, Teresa?
My heart leaped as a girl walked in. Girl? She was a woman. The most beautiful woman I'd ever seen.
Teresa is the oldest of the sisters.
Teresa bowed. I started to put out my hand, but didn't know whether I was supposed to shake hands with her or not. I pulled it back, the color rising in my face.
Howdy, Miss Teresa.
Buenos días, señor.
Disappointment touched me. or we wouldn't be able to talk to each other. Not, at least, until I learned Spanish. And suddenly, I knew I was going to learn in a hurry. A shadow fell across the open doorway. Another brother stood there, one I judged to be nearly as old as Ramon. He scowled, his gaze touching first Thomas, then Muley, then me.
¿Quién son esos?
This is my brother Antonio. Next to me, he's the oldest. Next to me, he runs the family since our father is gone. Next to me.
Ramon retold for the brothers and sisters what had happened to him and Felix. I found Teresa watching me, and my gaze dropped away from her. It was the younger girl, Maria, who stepped forward and stood almost toe-to-toe with me.
Enséñeme cómo habla así.
Maria, she says she wished to speak English so she can say to you how much thanks she has in her heart.
Tell her, Ramon, that I'll come over here as often as I can. I'll teach her to talk American. I'll teach all of those who want to learn.
Él te va a enseñar.
Maria clapped her hands, so I guessed that Ramon had told her about my offer to teach her English. I found Teresa smiling. This time, I kept my nerve and returned the smile. Antonio did not miss the look that passed between Teresa and me. He pointed first at me, then at Teresa, and said something to Ramon.
¿Cómo se atreve a mirar a Teresa? Ella está comprometida.
Then he turned on his heel and strode out of the house. I saw Teresa drop her gaze, hurt.
What was that all about?
Antonio has a strong mind. He does not like Americans.
What's wrong with Americans?
For me, nothing. I have Americano friends. But Antonio is like some other of my people. He hates those who are not the same as he is.
Maybe some American did him dirty.
No, but he thinks they will someday. So he hates now.
That's a hell of a thing. Hating us for no cause.
Ramon, Antonio said something about Teresa and me.
It is not important.
He must have thought so.
He says I should tell you Teresa is, how you say, promised. She has a man who will be her husband. Many years ago, it is decided by our father and by the father of Diego Esquivel.
They decided? Didn't she have any say-so?
She was only a child. This is a matter for the fathers.
It don't hardly seem fair to her.
Diego is a good man. Good friend of mine.
Does she love him?
One learns to love. As one learns to speak English or Spanish. It is the way of our fathers.
I don't see why it should make any difference to you, Josh.
But I looked into the beautiful eyes of Teresa Hernandez, and I knew it was going to matter to me. It was going to matter a lot. The people kept coming, some with proper papers and some without. Most of them came to farm and raise their families, seeking peace and opportunity. But there were some who seemed to be looking for trouble from the time they dropped their saddles to the grass and claimed their ground. 4 miles to the south of us, 3 men made camp and started clearing the land. 2 were young brothers, Jacob and Ezekiel Phipps, late of Kentucky. They had come to Texas for the same reasons we had. Their father had sent them in search of a virgin land, just as he himself had searched a generation before. They were a decent pair, loud, but basically honest, with one bad weakness. They were easily led. And leading them was a shouting, cursing, irascible old reprobate named Alfred Noonan. Stocky, red-faced, he had been in Texas several times off and on through the last 10 years. He told us that once he had smuggled forbidden trade goods down into Mexico. He had been hounded and hunted and shot at by Mexican soldiers, so he nursed a virulent hatred of Mexicans in general and officials in particular. He had managed to rub off this feeling onto the Phipps brothers, though neither of them had ever seen enough Mexicans to count on their fingers. Thomas fell in with Noonan and the Phipps brothers like a thirsty duck that has found a water hole. When Thomas and Noonan got started talking, it was always a marathon of sedition, with the Phipps brothers eagerly joining in like a pair of young coon dogs following the older hounds. It seemed Noonan always knew of a revolution brewing somewhere down in Mexico. There had been a lot of them. And he was full of ideas about how he and Thomas and the Phipps boys could smuggle guns in there and get rich.
It's all just talk. You ought to be able to tell that. Ain't none of it ever gonna come to pass.
This is dangerous talk. You know what Colonel Austin said about us getting mixed up in Mexican politics?
I'd rather be mixed up in their politics than mixed up in their families. The kind of friends you got, you have no call to be talking about mine.
The argument always came down to that, sooner or later. I'd been going over to the Hernandez Rancho often. I always tried to explain to Thomas that I was only going so I could learn to talk Mexican and to teach the Hernandez family how to speak American. But Thomas figured all along that my main interest was in Teresa Hernandez. Maria, 15, was the best learner. Teresa was learning English too, but English was only her secondary interest in the lessons, as Spanish was mine. Muley always went with me. It always amazed me how he got along with the smaller members of the Hernandez family. In the years since, I've seen Mexican and American kids get along like cousins without either really knowing a word the other spoke. There's an understanding between children that has nothing to do with words, and Muley, in many ways, was a child. Language wasn't important to Teresa and me either. We understood each other without stumbling over the problems of translation. A glance, a quick touching of the fingertips when nobody was looking, we didn't really need to talk. The trouble was, though, that we were never alone. Always someone managed to be nearby, letting us know we were watched. Often it was her mother, sometimes one of the brothers or sisters. Occasionally it was the smoldering Antonio, hating me because my eyes were blue and my skin was light, making it plain that he never intended either of us to forget Teresa was already promised. Through the long summer, I kept going, and I kept learning. I got so I understood Spanish tolerably well. I learned more than language. Ramon and Felix taught me a lot about their way of handling the wild native cattle. They taught me the fundamentals of using the rawhide riata to catch animals, and I practiced it until I was a fair to middling hand. I learned how the Mexicans captured wild cattle and took the vinegar out of them, firebranding them with a hot iron that stamped a permanent claim of ownership on them. The Hernandez brothers hated working in the fields and did as little of it as they could get by with. They enjoyed breaking wild horses to ride or gathering wild cattle and putting their brand on them. It was hard work, but it had an excitement to it that a man never found behind a plow. Even there, I found there were basic differences between my outlook and that of Ramon Hernandez. Sometimes it would be only the middle of the afternoon, and there would still be plenty of cattle nearby for the taking.
Enough. It has been a good day. One does not want to be greedy.
Ramon, it's a long time till dark. Why quit now?
Work was made for the convenience of man, and not meant for the work. Besides, over that hill lies the home of the most beautiful Gloria Vasquez. And I would like to go and pay my respects. After all, she might one day be the mother of my sons.
Other times it might be Katerina Torres, or Silvia Martinez y Flores, or Margarita Sanchez. No matter. He was always watching for the woman who would be his wife. He said he did not know yet what she looked like, but he thought he would know her when she crossed his path. Felix would smile and shrug as if to say he and I might as well go home. Felix was a year older than Maria, just at the age when he was looking for somebody to follow. One time it would be the grinning Ramon, another it would be the brooding Antonio, who had a way of making a sunny day dark. If Felix was dark and morose, he was following Antonio. If he was joking and enjoying himself, it was Ramon day. It pleased me to see that Felix followed Ramon more than he followed Antonio. Felix had the markings of a good man if he didn't choose wrong. From what Ramon told me about Diego Esquivel, the man Teresa was pledged to marry, he sounded all right. Under different circumstances, I wouldn't have hated him. Except for Antonio Hernandez, I might have had a chance to marry Teresa myself. I should have expected the thing he did, but it came as a surprise. One day, when Muley and I rode into the Hernandez place, we found the family strangely silent. Teresa, what's wrong?
Josh, friend, let us go out into the cool of the arbor. We have something to talk about. First of all, let us be honest. For a long time, we have known of your feeling for Teresa. And we have known she felt strongly about you. But you were told from the first that she was promised in the manner of our people. Perhaps we should have done something to stop this at the beginning when there would have been little pain. But you were our friend, and we did not know how. Well, now there is no choice. The pain has to come. Do not ask me why Antonio hates you. Do not even ask him, for he does not know, except that you are of one people and we are of another. He has not liked what has happened between you and Teresa. he has taken it upon himself to stop it. He went to bar. He talked to Diego Esquivel, and together they planned the wedding. Diego is on his way here now with his family and the priest. The wedding will be tomorrow.
Ramon, she doesn't love him. She doesn't even know him.
What can be done? It is the tradition. Love comes and love goes. But tradition lasts forever.
To hell with tradition. I love her and she loves me.
She will learn to love, Diego. It is our people's way.
I'll take her away from here. I'll make her one of my people.
You cannot do that. She has too much honor to go against the wishes of her father, rest his soul.
I strode into the house and Ramon followed me. I found Mrs. Hernandez in the front room with Teresa and Antonio, watching me worriedly.
Teresa, this is not going to happen. I'm not going to allow it. You're going to marry me.
Away from here, Americano. Teresa is not yours, and she will never be yours. She stays among her own.
Come on. I'm taking you away.
I didn't even see the knife until Teresa screamed. There was a blur of a hand, the flash of the blade. He held the point against my throat. It burned like fire.
I would see both of you dead first. Turn loose her hand, Americano, or you die right now.
Antonio, no!
Put the knife away, Antonio. Josh, we have enjoyed your company here many times. We had hoped nothing would ever come between us to spoil it. But now we must ask you to leave. We must keep the door shut against you until the wedding is over and Teresa's gone. Please go now and go quietly.
Wait for me, Teresa. I'll come for you.
Come back and you will be buried here.
Please go, Josh. Lose gracefully so we may still be friends.
I haven't lost yet.
All the way home, I tried to decide what I was going to do. I couldn't develop any definite plan. All I knew was that after dark, I was going back, and somehow I was going to break Teresa out of there. It was nearly dark when Muley and I reached the cabin. I saw three extra horses in the corral.
The Phipps boys are here! And that old man Noonan! He sure does talk a right smart, don't he, Josh? Half the time, I don't know what he's talking about.
Neither does he.
Wasn't looking for you back. Thought you'd spend the night with them Mexicans again.
Thomas, I gotta talk to you, and I gotta do it right now. Out in the corral. By ourselves. Leave Noonan and them Phipps boys inside.
You heard him, boys.
Go on to the house, Muley.
I don't want to have to listen to old man Noonan.
Go listen to him anyway. After Muley walked off, I told Thomas that Diego Esquivel was on his way to marry Teresa.
Well, maybe now you can set your mind on your plowing.
But he's not going to marry her. I am.
How you figure that? I don't expect them Mexicans going to throw roses in your path and tell you to come take her.
I'm taking fresh horses and I'm going back to get her tonight. I'm going to break her out of there. I want you to help me, Thomas.
Me? Are you crazy?
You're my brother, Thomas. I've never asked you for much. I know you don't agree with me about Teresa, but I hope you'll be a big enough man to put that aside now and help me.
Josh, going over there and loving her up is one thing. Actually marrying her is something else.
I'm going to do it, with your help or without it. I just hoped it would be with your help. Thomas stared at me, then turned away. I didn't realize what he was going to do until he opened the gate. Then he turned and waved his hat, shouting at the horses. Before I could move, they were on their way out of the corral.
Damn you, Thomas! Muley, come help me!
Thomas stood in the gate. As I started around him, his fist came at me. It slammed me back against the fence.
Noonan, boys!
The four of them moved in on me. I tried to lunge at Thomas, but strong hands grabbed and held me. Thomas's fist drove into my stomach. All my breath left me.
Now, Josh, just quit it. What we're doing for your own good.
Josh, I'm coming!
I saw Muley coming to help me. I tried to yell at him to stay where he was, but no sound would come. Muley plowed in with fists swinging. One of the Phipps boys backhanded him. Muley dropped.
Looks like we'll just have to tie Josh up and keep him a while. Never thought I'd see the day when I have to do this my own flesh and blood.
And I struggled against them, but they had me so tight there wasn't a chance to break loose.
Thomas, what do you say we take them over to our cabin a spell? There's more of us to keep an eye on them there. And if drastic measures is called for, we might come near taking them than you would being his brother and all.
I don't want him hurt none.
We'll just kind of salt him down, him and Muley. You won't have to fret none or feel the least bit uneasy. Come tomorrow, Josh will still be a happy bachelor, and you won't have no Mexican kinfolks.
I'll get you. I'll get all of you.
Sure you will, Josh. But for now, you're going to come on along like a good boy. Thomas, how about you bringing them horses back in?
They kept us tied all that night, and all the next day and night. They untied Muley to let him eat. They tried untying me once, but tied me up again when I attempted to fight my way out of the cabin. If I had any satisfaction at all, it was that I had left my mark on all of them. The afternoon of the wedding, Noonan rode to the Hernandez place and spied on it from a distance. He came riding in next morning, satisfied.
It was quite a sight, Josh. You ought to have seen it. When them Mexicans throw a celebration, they sure do it upright.
They're married?
Sure enough. Handsome-looking couple, best I could tell. You gotta understand, I was too far away to see real clear. I doubt if she'll miss you much, Josh. Mexican gals have got a talent for loving, and I expect that boy will keep her too busy to be fretting herself about some calf-eyed Americano. I reckon I'll just as well untie you and let you go. Now, Josh, you wouldn't go and hurt an old man.
I reached for him, but missed.
You're sure an ungrateful kind, Josh. No wonder you're such a burden to your brother.
He ran out of the cabin. I untied Muley. We walked out into the daylight. It hurt my eyes at first, but that was only a small addition to the agony I felt in body and spirit. The whole world had fallen in on me. I caught up our horses, trying to choke down the rage which fought for release. I think if I had had a gun, I would have gone back into the cabin and killed all three men, or tried to.
Muley, you ride on home.
What are you fixing to do, Josh?
I'm going to the Hernandez place.
Seems like it's a little late now, don't it? I mean, they said there had done been a wedding and all that. There ain't nobody but God can undo a wedding, is there?
Just go on home, Muley.
When you figure on being back?
I don't know. Just look for me when you see me coming.
8 days came and went before the night I finally rode up to our cabin. I swung down woodenly and unsaddled, turning the horse into the corral and tying the gate. I trudged to the cabin, my head down, my throat in a knot.
Josh! That you, Josh?
I walked in past him without being able to look into his face.
Josh, it's been over a week. Where you been? You're sure making it hard on yourself. You've been blinded by something you take to be love. Hell, you don't even know what love is. This'll all blow over and you'll thank me. You'll look at her and tell me how glad you are you're not tied to her.
I'll never see her again, Thomas. Nobody will. She's dead.
I think that was the first time he ever really saw how deeply and honestly I had been in love with Teresa.
Dead? But how?
The morning after they were married, the two of them set out alone toward Bar ahead of the others. When the Esquivel family came along later, they found them, what the Indians had left of them.
My God, Josh.
If I'd gone back that night, she'd still be alive. I'd have gotten her away from there, and I'd have taken her back toward the settlements, where there wouldn't have been any Indians. That's how it would have been, Thomas, if you hadn't stopped me.
I was thinking of you, Josh.
Or maybe you were just thinking of yourself, and how bad you'd hate to have a Mexican woman for your sister-in-law.
What can I say?
It'd be better if you didn't say anything.
Josh, that was over a week ago. Where have you been all this time?
Been looking for some Indians to kill.
You find any?
They disappeared like smoke.
But a week, Josh? How'd you come to stay so long?
Afraid to come back any sooner. Afraid I might kill you. I won't do it, though. I got over that much of it. But from now on, I'm through letting you think for me. I'm through listening to you. I don't even want to see you.
Josh.
I couldn't hold it in any longer. I hit him. When I saw him stagger back, all the anger and all the grief that had banked up in me seemed to explode at once. I tied into him, slashing, jabbing, then exhausted, I collapsed. For a long time, I lay there, letting the hurt have its way with me. Finally, I pushed to my feet and saw Thomas sitting on a rawhide chair, regarding me gravely. His face was bruised and swollen, his clothing torn, but in his eyes was only sadness.
Well, Thomas, which one of us is it going to be?
What do you mean?
I mean one of us has got to go. Will it be you or me?
It's that bad, is it?
It's that bad.
I wish it wasn't this way, Josh. This coin is gold. Come all the way with us from Tennessee. You call it.
Heads I go, tails you do.
The coin caught the candlelight for an instant as it flipped out of Thomas's hand, went up, then fell. Thomas leaned over and picked it up.
Tails.
I didn't see it.
That's what it was, though. Tails. The place is yours.
I want you to go tonight, Thomas.
All right.
He gathered up a few of his belongings, rolled his bedding, and stepped out into the night to fetch his horse.
Josh, it's awful dark out there. It ain't good to turn a man out into the night this way.
I'd have gone if it had come up heads.
Maybe it did, Josh.
Hard work has never been popular, but it is a merciful healer. Since Thomas had left, it was up to Muley and me to bring in the crops that fall. If I hadn't been up moving before daylight and laboring like a gray mule until dark, then flopping on my cot too tired to move, I might not have brought myself through those first dark weeks. Thomas stayed out of my sight. Muley tried to hide it from me, but in his guileless way, he let me find out that Thomas would come around now and again when I was somewhere else. Thomas would look things over, question Muley a little, then fade away before I got back. Much of the time, he was staying with Noonan and the Phipps boys. Once, I learned, Thomas went off on a long trip with Noonan somewhere to the south. Not for the world would I have admitted it, but I worried about him. I knew Noonan had him mixed up in a smuggling venture or something of that kind. Trouble and contention were like food and drink to Noonan's breed. The long months went by and Ramon came to see us finally, he and Felix. Muley and I were working in the field where our small crop of cotton had matured into a blanket of white fluff. Ramon sat on his horse and watched me.
You do not look good, friend Josh. You have carried grief badly.
How is a man supposed to carry grief, Ramon? It's a heavy burden no matter how you try to pick it up.
Ours is the grief too. We could help you carry it, if you would but ask.
I'll tote my own load.
We have not seen you in a long time.
I turned away and picked up my cotton sack. Ramon and Felix got off their horses. Muley ran forward to pump Felix's hand, his face shining with pleasure. Ramon fell in beside me and silently began to help, putting cotton into my sack. He had probably never picked any before because the Mexicans themselves rarely grew it. Ramon and Felix soon had their fingers torn and sore from the hard, dry burrs.
I had rather break my neck with the wild cattle and horses than to break my back in the cotton.
There's not much fun in the cotton field, but cotton sells, and there's precious little else that does.
What is money that one must do so many unpleasant things to get it?
Well, Ramon, money is... Well, I mean, a man's just got to have money.
Among our people, there are some who live a lifetime and never feel a piece of silver cross their palm. A man can live from the land if he will be content with what the land chooses to give him. This growing of cotton is not a natural thing like hunting. Do you see the deer or the wolf or the buffalo planting a cotton? No, they live as God intended them to, from what the land itself provides. If he had intended that we have cotton, he could have planted it himself. This kind of work does no honor to a man.
Work is honor. The book says that by the sweat of the brow shalt thou earn thy bread.
I had rather sweat my brow running the wild cattle. What could a man want that would make him do dishonoring work to get money? He cannot eat money. He cannot wear it. All he can do is trade it for something he wants. A few beans, a little corn, enough beef. What more could a man want?
I knew Ramon was purposely working up an argument with me to take my mind away from Teresa. I also knew he was dead serious in what he said.
In the book you learn of the lilies of the field, they do not toil, neither do they spin. And of a certainty, you find no lilies in a field of cotton.
I let go of my cotton sack while I wiped the sweat from my brow. It gave me a righteous feeling to know I was earning my bread like the book said to, but it never had occurred to me that there might be conflict between that part of the word and the passage Ramon had quoted. It's all in the way a man looks at it, I reckon. You and me, we just naturally look at it different.
I think, my friend, this is the big problem between your people and mine. There is little understanding. Perhaps there never will be. Your people say my people are lazy, that they work no more than they have to. My people say your people are greedy, that you work too long and too hard to get money for things you do not need, and that you do not take time to taste life for the good flavor that is in it. In too many ways, we are different. we shall never be alike.
Ramon was wise enough to see it, though it took me a long time to admit he was right. No one ever really left the old country when he came to the new. Wherever the settler ventured, he took with him his customs and beliefs, the individual ways of the land he had come from. There was no such thing as a fresh, clean start. He resisted whatever was alien to the things he had known before. That is the great irony of it all. The fact that we pulled apart and made so much of our difference only proved how much alike we were. A foretaste of trouble came when a Texian force attacked the guardhouse at Anahuac on the coast to release prisoners who had been wrongfully taken. Shortly afterward came a battle at Velasco, when a Mexican garrison tried to stop the sailing of a Texian ship that carried two cannon. I learned that Thomas had joined Noonan and the Phipps brothers for a fast ride to the coast as soon as they heard. By the time they got there, the smoke had cleared. Diplomatically minded Texians and Mexicans were working to mend the breach that had been torn by their more warlike friends. If the battles had any good result, it was that Mexico pulled most of her garrison out of Texas. They had been a festering sore, a constant reminder that Mexico didn't really trust her new citizens from the north. Santa Anna was a revolutionary leader in Mexico in those days. He took the Texian side after Anahuac and Velasco. A fresh wave of enthusiasm swept through the old settlers. Here, it seemed, was a new Mexican leader who understood and liked these blue-eyed foreigners. A Mexican who was going to give us all a fair deal. There was a time, a short time, when it seemed we were about to get the world by the tail with a downhill pull. Mexico let up some on its immigration laws. More people crowded in. It got so that on an early fall morning when the air was crisp, I could hear a neighbor's axe ringing from across the hill. One spring day of 1833, Muley and I were nearing San Felipe in our wagon when we came across a familiar figure astride a bay horse. He rode toward us with head down, lost in his meditation. He didn't seem to see us until we were almost upon him.
Howdy, Colonel Austin!
I'm sorry. I was absorbed with some worries of my own. I should know you. The faces are familiar.
Joshua Buckaloo, Colonel, and Muley Dodd. We live up yonder on the Colorado. You granted us the land.
Buckaloo, would you be the one who's been making so much talk of war?
I expect that to be my brother, sir. His name is Thomas. Him and me, we sort of come to a fork in the road. He seems to have took the left hand.
That's too bad, but he has a lot of company these days.
I'm sorry, Colonel, that things don't seem to be working out the way they ought to for you. Anything Muley and me can do, we'd be tickled to try.
There is a need for so many things, I would hardly know where to start.
Well, sir, like what, for instance?
It's a beautiful land. I always thought Texas had the greatest potential of any land I ever set my eyes upon. And it does yet, I suppose, if only these war makers would cease their everlasting talk of disunity and unrest.
We live way off yonder in the far settlements. We don't hear much of what's going on.
I imagine you hear enough. We have bad trouble ahead of us if we don't curb these restless spirits. For years, I've preached that we should go our own peaceful way. And for years, the people would listen to me. But now other voices speak louder than mine.
We've always listened to you, Colonel.
I wish there were more like you. How go things up on the Colorado?
Fair enough, sir. Moisture's good for the spring planting. Grass is rising fine.
I mean politically. Are they talking as restlessly there as they are in other parts of Texas?
Well, sir, you'll always find people like my brother. They're dissatisfied no matter what. We have Mexican neighbors and we get along. The government don't bother us much out there. Too far for office-bred people to ride, I expect. Not meaning any personal offense to you, sir. I mean, it's different with you.
My friend, I have ridden horseback so many thousands of miles in colonizing Texas that a ride up the Colorado River would be like a Sunday picnic. Even now, I'm preparing for another trip to Mexico City.
It's a mighty long way down there, farther even than to Tennessee.
Far in miles and in mind. I never look forward to that journey. It's like going to another world. But I have to. I want to reassure the authorities that we are loyal here. With luck, I may be able to persuade them to take action against some of the conditions which have caused grievances here. There are grounds for grievances, I would be the first to admit that. But we must have patience. The Mexicans move slower than we. Change cannot be rushed upon them.
No, sir, it sure can't.
You're one of the older settlers here now. It's the old settlers I must depend upon to keep things from getting out of hand. Counsel with the new ones when you can. Help them realize how precarious our situation is.
I'll do all I can.
Mexico City. It's a long, long way. I hope I can be back again before the summer is out.
He wasn't. It was 2 years before we were to see Austin. He would come home a shaken and disillusioned man, no longer inclined to soothe the restless ones. He would come home from a long and unjustified imprisonment, certain at last that Texas had no future tied to Mexico, where all life depended upon the whims of whatever man happened to have his fist gripped tightly around the whip of government. Looking back afterward, we could see that war was as certain as the rising and setting of the hot Texas sun. Most of us old settlers denied its coming as long as we could. We wanted to plow our fields and work our stock and live our lives by our own pattern and be left alone. But it came anyway. Zacatecas and Monclova were only words to us then, but we were dimly aware that places of those names existed deep down in Mexico, and that angry revolts had leaped to flame there. Santa Anna crushed those people with a red-smeared fist. Then his ruthless eyes turned northward. He had taken off his smiling mask. The sense of absolute power had gone to his brain like the fire of bad tequila. Now he was a stalking wolf that had gotten a taste of blood and liked it. Ramon Hernandez had been on a trip to San Antonio de Bar with his wife to show their baby to her parents there. She was already with child again, and soon she would not have been able to make the journey. There was always a nagging uneasiness about any traveler until he was home and safe, so I was relieved to see Ramon riding up to our field. Ramon had finally found a long-sought woman who would be the mother of his sons. Miranda was her name. She was tiny, like so many Mexican women, but she could move about like some kind of a spirit and do work that would break the back of some larger women. Because she was so tiny, childbearing was difficult. There was a time when it appeared she might not live through it. But she had, and the trip to Bar was Ramon's reward to her for delivering him a son and for promising him another.
Hola, amigo!
What's the news in Bar?
Austin is back. It is said in Bar that he arrived in Velasco aboard the San Felipe. It is also said that there was a battle in Velasco Harbor and the San Felipe captured a Mexicano warship.
Why do they have to do it, Ramon? They play with firebrands in a powder house.
God made the animals to fight. It is their nature. I am afraid he made the man a little too much like he made the animals. It is born in them. It is beyond them to be able to change the will of God.
It's not the will of God that we go to war.
He made men different from each other. He made them to talk different tongues and wear different colored skins. A great many men have died for that, and not alone. It is said that even the Colonel Austin talks now of war. It is said that even he, who always talked of peace, is saying that Texas and Mexico must free themselves of Santa Anna.
He spent a long time in prison. A gentleman caged up like an animal and for no good reason. It's enough to make him bitter.
Or to make him realistic. He is right, I think. There are far more Americanos in Texas than Mexicanos. Mexico has always had her Santa Annas. They run in the blood, like some disease passed down from father to son. We Mexicanos expect it. We accept it. But you Americanos will fight. I think you will cut free from it or die.
If it comes to that, Ramon, what will you do?
Texas is my home. Yet I am Mexicano. I do not know what I will do.
Ramon! Here comes Felix! He's riding up yonder with Antonio.
They were riding fast. Antonio usually did. He had little regard for his horses. But somehow I could tell this time it wasn't just thoughtlessness. They rode with a purpose.
Something may have happened to Miranda.
Come, brother. It is time to fight.
Miranda is all right?
There is nothing wrong with your woman, but there is much wrong for your country while you stand here and talk with your Americano friend. It is time now for shooting, not for talking.
Antonio, you have been drinking.
I do not drink when my country needs me. Fighting has begun, brother, por allá in Gonzales. There has been a call for men.
I have not heard.
You spent too much time on the road home from Bar with your woman. You missed the news. The Americanos have a cannon at Gonzales, and they refuse to give it up. It is time to decide. Shall we bow down to this plague of locusts, or shall we offer ourselves as patriots? Felix and I have made our choice. What is yours?
Felix? You would take Felix? He is still a boy.
He will fight like a man.
Felix, this is not for you.
Felix, you'd better listen to Ramon.
Yesterday we were friends, Josh. Today we are enemies. I am a Mexican.
What are you, Ramon? The time has come to choose, and choose quickly.
Antonio, you are crazy.
I expected as much. Stay at home, then. Stay at home with your woman and your Americano friends. And when they have you in chains, remember that your brothers had the spine to fight.
Felix paused a moment, his eyes fixed on his older brother. He was wavering.
Felix, stay here.
Felix! Thus, war reached us, even here in the far settlements on the Colorado. I had a strong feeling now that Thomas would return, and I knew what he would be wanting.
Howdy there, Josh. Might I be coming in?
Sure, Jared. Come in and we'll fix you something to eat.
Josh, I got somebody with me.
Bring him on in.
Howdy, Josh.
He halted in the open doorway. He said nothing at first. We stared at each other in silence. 3 years had passed since we had stood face to face. He appeared to have aged much more than that, for his eyes were grave, his cheeks brown and lean.
Josh, you fellas ain't gonna fight each other again, are you?
No, Muley, we won't fight. You've changed.
So have you, Josh. Been a heap of water floating under the bridge.
We didn't shake hands. Neither of us was ready to make the first move, so it was not made at all. Too much stood between us. The bitterness of the parting and the long, empty years since.
You been well?
Yes. You?
Tolerable, I reckon. I expect you wonder why I come after all this time.
I think I know. It's the war, isn't it?
Santa Ana sent the troops up from Mexico under general calls. Then I'll join Ugarte Chia and Bar. If they come for us and find us scattered, it'll be the death of us all. You heard about the fight at Gonzales?
I heard this afternoon.
The call's gone out for help. We gotta band together and whip them back before they pick us off one by one. I'm going, Josh. I'd like you to go with me.
Thomas, are you sure?
I know there's been a lot come between us, Josh. I know how you feel about what I've done, but we got to quit fighting each other now and fight together. Else it's all over for the Americans in Texas.
Have you seen Colonel Austin?
I've talked to people who have. Jared can tell you.
They treated him real bad down in Mexico. He says we got no choice anymore but to fight. He's going to Gonzales himself.
I've got friends who'll be on the Mexican side.
In war, a man's got no friends except those who are with him.
I couldn't take Muley. He's got no business going into something like this.
Muley can stay here. There's neighbors enough now to help watch out for him. Been no engines in a long time.
I guess you've got other men ready to go?
We'll all be gathering over at Noonan's. We'll ride for Gonzales in the morning.
I turned toward the wall pegs where my old flintlock rested. With it, I had brought down more deer than I could count. Now I would use it to bring down men. I'll go. Give me time to gather my plunder and talk to Muley. I'll go. The carnival spirit prevailed at Noonan's. The old rogue was boasting loud and long, telling how he had foretold this trouble the first time a Mexican soldier had shot at him years ago. He didn't mention what he had been doing to get shot at, and nobody seemed of a mind to ask him.
They're a bunch of yellow cowards. They slit a man's throat when they get the upper hand on him, but they'll squeal like a pig under a gate if things go against them. Give us 50 good men, and this war will be nothing but a horse race. Them running and us chasing. We'll all be home and a-plowing our fields inside of 2 weeks.
Old Noonan had never plowed a field to my recollection. The only thing I'd ever known him to raise was hell. I took my blanket and walked away from Noonan's cabin. I stretched out on the ground by his corral where our horses were penned. Presently, Thomas came out and joined me. He said nothing for a while. He sat leaning against a post in the darkness, drawing on his pipe and savoring the homegrown tobacco.
Josh, it's been a long time since that girl died. Have you got over it all right?
I can think about her now without it paining me so, if that's what you mean. It's only that now and again I get lonesome. I get to thinking how things would be now if I...
There's some single girls around. You haven't found yourself one?
I haven't been looking.
Maybe you ought to. I think you need a woman, Josh. And likely someplace there's a woman that needs you.
There was one once, remember?
She was a Mexican.
I knew he hadn't changed. We reached Gonzales too late to help, for the battle was over. The town's old 18 had stalled the Mexicans for 3 days until reinforcements came from neighboring settlements. The whole affair seemed an improbable parody now, on the face of it. With this battle won, no one was sure just what should be done next. Men and horses and mules and wagons came pouring into Gonzales, ready for war, but no one agreed just how this war was to be fought. Angry talk and fist fights erupted. A dozen men who had been leaders in their own communities wanted to command this volunteer expedition against the Mexicans. Even narrow-gauge men like Noonan saw themselves as the ones to lead the crusade.
I've been fighting Mexicans longer than half of you been drinking hard liquor. I'll take on any one of you now. Choose your weapons. Knives, guns. I'll even fight you with a chunk of firewood.
Shut up, Noonan, or I'll get the wind out of you and you'll shrink to where a man could stuff you in a saddlebag.
Y'all hush up now. We're here to fight the Mexicans.
Austin arrived, and just in time. Always in the past, we had turned to Austin for counsel. Seeing him came as a shock to me. He looked much older than when I had last encountered him that day on the road near San Felipe. His hair was graying. His face was thinner than ever before. His shoulders stooped. Those strong eyes, which used to look a hole through a man, were melancholy now, and tired.
Gentlemen, we have come upon a better time. The tyrant has torn up the good constitution of 1824, which first established us here and started us toward prosperity. He has declared that from now on, we have only those rights which he chooses to confer. We have striven for peace, but have been given war. The salvation of Texas is in our hands, and perhaps the salvation of all Mexico. Let us fight for the Constitution of 1824. We can no longer retreat. The die has been cast. We must fight and win, or Santa Anna will kill us as traitors.
A council of war was set up. Though Austin protested that he knew little of military matters, he was unanimously elected the general-in-chief.
Very well, then, I shall accept. And my first order is this. We march at daybreak. We march against Cos and Ugartechea. We shall go to San Antonio de Bar.
And so we marched, our little volunteer army of Texas. There were less than 400 of us at the beginning, and what an army. There were coonskin caps and Mexican sombreros, Kentucky long rifles, and short-barreled muskets. Some men rode big, well-bred horses they had brought from the States. Most of us straddled raw Mexican ponies or mustangs, and a few rode mules. Along the line, we picked up volunteers. A pair of mustang runners here, a bee hunter there. From Goliad trooped a group of dark-skinned Mexicans, stirred by reports of the bloodshed in Zacatecas, and eager to join us against Santa Anna. Their arrival caused a ripple of uneasiness, but they were accepted, for every gun would count. With the group from Goliad came word that Texians had stormed the fortress there and had captured the Mexican troops, along with a large store of arms and ammunition left by General Cos on his march toward San Antonio. We came to Salado Creek, about 5 miles from San Antonio. Scouting parties went out to reconnoiter, but Austin made no move for an immediate attack on the Mexican force, but called for Jim Bowie and Captain J.W. Fannin Jr. to take a detail of 92 men and find a good campsite as near the city as possible. I missed out getting into this bunch, but Thomas was with them. He had been restless as a caged cat lying around camp. A chance to ride anywhere was as welcome to him as rain on new planted corn. He got more than he bargained for. Bowie and Fannin selected a place near the old Concepcion mission. They camped their men there for the night. Next morning, they found they had been surrounded and were outnumbered by at least 4-1. When the smoke cleared, the Mexican troops were in wild retreat for town, leaving their artillery and 20 to 30 of their men behind them dead. The Texian loss? 1. Thomas came back flushed with excitement. The battle had fired his blood like raw wine. That wasn't enough action to keep free men happy. Every day, the number of men became smaller and smaller. They were pulling out by ones and twos and threes, going home to see about the crops, going to comfort the wife and kids. The word we got in camp was that Austin wanted to march into town and take it, but others were counseling against him. The longer he waited, the more desertions he suffered, the lower sagged the troops' morale. I'll admit that if it hadn't been for Thomas, I'd probably have pulled out like so many others did. I thought often about Muley all by himself out on the place, probably scared half to death. But Thomas was duty-bound to stay. All hell couldn't have pried him loose. It looked as though we were going to lose the siege of San Antonio de Bar by deterioration rather than by battle. On the 4th of December, 2 months after the cannon had spoken at Gonzales, Ben Milam walked among the discouraged men who still remained. A grim determination was in his eyes and in the hard set of his jaw.
Who'll go with old Ben Milam into San Antonio?
By twos and threes, by tens and twelves, men rose to their feet and reached for their rifles. Thomas spoke not a word, but he tucked the old Kentucky flintlock under his arm and felt for his shot pouch and powder horn. He glanced at me, his eyes asking the question. I'll come along.